They even forget in the same generation. They just don't forget. It's not that their children forget what their parents' deal they made with God. The people who made the deal themselves forget. It's like you can sit around here and we can talk about the spirit and about who man is, and you can get a certain feeling about yourself, and you can walk down to the car, and by the time you're over the hill, you can be uptight, angry, bugged, full of all kinds of stuff. You've just lost your whole center again. Boy, that's so easy. There are some people in this community who I realize that my words bring down, because when they're by themselves, they're just so high, they're just so far out, they're just beyond words, they're just so in the spirit, in the light. Then I come along, whatever I'm going to say to them is going to bring them down. And there are other people here that the minute I turn away, they are so in worldly stuff, it's unbelievable. I mean, they'll just turn away from me, and the next conversation they'll have will be something so worldly I can't even believe it's happening right here. It's like water seeks its own level. Water seeks its own level. You can force it higher or force it lower, and then it'll immediately go back to whatever level it can function at. And it's begun to sort of horrify me to see somebody come along that is so beautiful, such a spiritually high being, and that the mask or the veil is just so thick at this point. They're around me and they almost sense their own heritage or tradition or where they are inside, but not quite. And I can feel it, and I try to make contact, and then I see them go back under. I think Macho better be tied up or something like that. Would somebody help on that? Verite will do. Eric, Verite will take you. Because Macho has really been constantly causing a lot of trouble. She was going with much resistance. We have some dogs in heat here, and poor Macho doesn't know where to start in the sea of riches. It's like watching someone you love drown. You're watching them go under and you can't do anything because this isn't the round they're going to not drown. It's like a nightmare that people have, a recurrent nightmare that somebody they love is just beyond their grasp and slipping away. Like somebody's going over the side of a thing and you reach for them and your hand just misses. That feeling. If I constantly, for about a year after I got back here, I went through this feeling, if I were only pure, that person would hear what they have to hear. See, I was caught in this, I gotta do something. I gotta do something. I couldn't accept, although I could mouth it, intellectually I could say, look, there is no doer, and there's nothing to do. I couldn't emotionally accept this. I still had to do something. See, I'd gone through a series of stages. When I was a young boy or a teenager, I was an idealist. There was a lot I had to do. Then I got that cynical feeling as I saw how the wheels of the government and power and economics and all ran, and I thought, oh man, there's nothing an individual can do. You're just caught in this huge thing. And I got that deep depression that comes, that futility, that feeling of futility. And then I got to another place and I suddenly saw there was something you could do. And then I tried to do it and I saw I couldn't do it. Couldn't do it. Because what everybody needs from everybody else more than anything else is help in getting out of their own drama. Help in getting out of their own melodrama. And you can't get somebody else out of their melodrama unless you're out of it to begin with. If you're already in the quicksand, forget it. You can't help anybody else out of quicksand. As Ramakrishna says, somebody whose balances are not even, how can they help somebody else find true measure? So what gets to the place that and this is the height of the feeling of impotence, that the greatest thing you can do to help somebody else is to witness your own desire to help somebody else. That's a pretty trivial way of helping somebody. It's the same drama as this one. If I try to communicate to you, if I care about, like, I've got to get this message across to all of you. Forget it. Because I will be sending some vibrational message that will almost have in it something that prohibits your receiving it. And it's only when I use throwaways. All I'm doing is blowing these 3 hours. Throwing them away. Talking to the winds. Can I send the message with so little need behind it that you can hear it at the level it can do you some good? That you can work with it? That it can help you get free of attachment rather than catching you deeper and deeper into the thing? Deeper and deeper into the illusion. And at the same moment as I'm awed with the horror of the predicament that you can see somebody drowning and you can't do anything, I also am inside overwhelmed with the cosmic humor of the situation. That I am still caught in the illusion where I think there they are and there I am and there is something that needs to be done, and that's really funny. See, there are two levels back. There are all these levels back, actually. Level of wanting to help, level of feeling the frustration that you can't help that way. That's the horror. Then there's the level of seeing the humor of your own seeing of the horror. Because all I did was lose for a moment the understanding that we weren't running the show in the first place. I have quoted before, and I will quote now again, if I can recall it, the quote from the book René by René Dumas. The book is called Mount Analog. And the book concerns a group of Europeans who were mountain climbers, and they calculated by mathematical techniques the fact that somewhere in the world there was a mountain higher than anybody had ever known. And the reason nobody ever found this mountain was because it was located on an island and it had its own magnetic field around it such that a ship going towards it would go right around to thinking it was going in a straight line. So nobody ever found this place. And they computed it, and they computed that if you approach this island from the west looking east at sunrise or sunset at certain times, seasons, certain astronomical configurations, you might be able to see a channel through to this island where upon would be this mountain, which they called Mount Analog. And they outfitted a ship and they went there, and indeed they found the mountain, and they got to the base of the mountain and they found some strange and unusual people, and they outfitted a climbing party and they went up and they found all their methods of climbing, none of them would work, their methods of taking food and so on. They had to adjust new things at each new level, which is exactly a perfect metaphor for the journey into consciousness, which is what the book was about. René Dumas was a nitrous oxide sniffer in the 30s in Paris. And the last quote in the René Dumas book was Captain Logos, who was the head of the expedition, who said, Captain Sogal, it's Logos backwards, actually. Captain Sogal, who said, by our calculations, thinking of nothing else, by our desires, abandoning all bodily comforts, by our efforts, renouncing all other considerations, we gained entry into this new world. So it seemed to us. But if we were able to approach Mount Analog, it was because the invisible beings who guard the entrance opened them for us. The cock crowing in the milky dawn thinks that its call raises the sun. The child crying in a closed room, howling in a closed room, thinks that its cry opens the door. But son and mother follow courses set by their own beings. Those who saw us, even though we could not see them, opened the door in answer to our puerile calculations. Our unsteady desires and our awkward efforts with a generous welcome. Now, there are some people who are living in this community and who are gathered here that when I would say to you, we are able to be here and this is all so harmonious and beautiful because of Maharaji's grace, because of the Guru's grace, Some of you would say, well, that's all very nice. That's sort of a pleasant way of putting it. But, you know, come on, that's sort of... He's just talking that kind of talk again. When you get right down to it, after all, you know, these are good kids that came along, and, you know, his father's a nice guy, and the place is built, and there's the land up there. Why shouldn't people? And it's all right. And it's just like when some people here sit down before their puja table and look at a picture of Maharaji or Haridas Baba or Ram or Krishna. They go through, well, it's an interesting sort of picture, and I'll think about the symbology of the person, and that will make me a purer being. And there are others who make contact and say, I have just been with Maharaji, or Maharaji just said, or... I live in a universe where I'm perfectly comfortable that man, as we know him at this frequency of reception through our senses and thoughts, is not the highest being on the phylogenetic scale. There are higher beings, and they are here too. And that these higher beings, one of the quality of higherness is that they do not live in time and space. They are not limited to a time-space locus like we are. So that they are not only here, but there are lots of other places simultaneously. I have a picture in my wall of one of the holy men of India who was, his particular thing was, his little siddhi or power, was that he would hold darshan in two places at once. He'd be sitting here, and he'd also be sitting in Boston. The group would be gathered there, too. Nobody know who is the real one, which twin has the Tony. You never knew. You never knew. Which was his material body, and which was a manifestation of his mind? Or they both were, or neither was, or what? Who knows? You talk about the grand design, or his will, not my, but thy will, O Lord. Who is that? Who's that, O Lord? Who is the O Lord? God have mercy. Lord have mercy. Is that like, Sam, lay off, have mercy? Is that the same thing? Is it just Sam that you can't see? Some of you have been able to break out of certain limitations of your consciousness to the extent that you have experienced other states of consciousness and met other beings other than these beings. And so what I'm saying sounds almost reasonable to you. Others, it sounds a little like pretty gamey speculation. Pretty gamey speculation. it makes a whole lot of difference to your head whether you think, for example, that whether or not the United States gets out of Vietnam, and whether or not Vietnam stops, and whether or not China gets strong, and whether or not there is a war between races, and whether or not it's all sitting in the head of Richard Nixon, or whether you think it's sitting in the head of a being who lives outside of time and space, who sees how it all is. I get really uptight if I thought that rational man was really running the show, because he's obviously so inadequate to do to the task. Since Richard Nixon can never get out of the predicament of being Richard Nixon long enough to appreciate what the problem is. I sit and somebody says, tells me about the horror of the world, and I say, it's all right. It sounds like a tremendously Pollyanna-ish attitude. It sounds like you're really saying, come on, don't get worried, don't get uptight, it's all okay, forget it. Just make believe it's beautiful. Ignore all the horror. The fact of the matter is, you can't change anything until you understand how it all is, and you can't understand how it all is until you yourself can calm your own consciousness and be awake and be independent of time and space. As long as you're stuck in the illusion of a fixed identity, there's very little you can do. For yourself or anyone else. I used to do marriage counseling, and I would get numbers of people who would say, we're getting married, and I know that this girl is very uptight, but I can do a lot for her. Or this girl would say, he's such a wonderful guy, and of course he's got these peculiarities, but I know that, that I can help him out of all that. See, the problem many of you have faced, I'm sure already, is that there is a discontinuous rate at which people awaken, or there are different people are at different stages. And what happens is you develop an entire circle of friends at one level of your own consciousness. And then you wake up just a little bit, and suddenly you look around, and all these groovy people you thought were just such a ball to hang out with, so stimulating, so interesting, so much fun, just seem like mechanical men to you. And there's a horror at first, because these are the people you loved just 5 minutes ago. What are you going to do about them? You're going to reject them? You've got to help them. But you can't help them. See, what a horrible predicament to be in. What a horrible predicament. Aren't you a true friend? That's what happened to Tim and I at Harvard at first. Tim, Leary, and I, we took these wild chemicals. See, we had all these groovy colleagues around us at Harvard. We really liked them. Dave McClellan, Herb Kelman, all kinds of nice guys. We took this chemical and we saw something and we wanted to share it with our friends. know, we love you. We want you to know what's happening to us. And they said, well, isn't that interesting? And then the next day, there they were, still being the same guys they were yesterday. And we said, look, you really got to try this. And they said, no. And there we were. That it was clear, no words we were going to say, we're going to do it. And they were not ready or open or willing or interested or anything, whatever you want to call it, or fool enough or however you want to define it, to attempt to have this kind of an experience. And what happened was, and it was just horrible, it's just like you have gotten on a, you're on an ocean liner and they throw off the ropes and then it slowly pulls away from the dock and you're waving and you just see all these people who you love become littler and littler and littler and littler and disappear into the background until they're just sort of like back there somewhere. And so what happens to many people is as they start to change their state of consciousness, simultaneously they start to change the nature of the people they hang out with, change the nature of their friends. And to the old friends, you appear as somebody who, as Gurdjieff says, your friends will start to find you very dull. You know, you're not very interesting anymore because you're not excited about the melodramas of life like you used to be.